It's the show that's all about hockey. The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show, presented by Shaws and Star Market. Download their Just For You app and save today.
Pasta with a rocket.
Also brought to you by Rodenheiser Home Services and Sports Etc. Now, Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirott, and Bob Beers.
Welcome in to another edition of the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. By far the worst part of this time of the year is how quickly it can be over. When we were with you last Saturday, Bruins leading in the series, 2-1, getting ready for Game 4. We come back together a week later and the Bruins season has been over for a couple of days, and we're here to recap it all and look forward to what should be a very interesting and very eventful offseason for this organization. So we welcome you into the Town Fair Tire Studios, Ryan Johnston, joined by Judd Sirott and Bob Beers, and your phone calls welcome throughout at 617-779-0985. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Good morning.
Sorry to be together under these circumstances. What happened over the course of the last week? How did the Islanders suddenly seize control of this series and eliminate the Bruins in six?
Game five, for me. I thought the Bruins were really good offensively in game five. Unfortunately, too many defensive breakdowns, and included the penalty kill, which they allowed three goals. And I know that there were some good bounces there, but still, you know, allow three goals. The two goals that were scored 5-on-5 were point-blank, you know, defensive breakdowns, you know, whether it was not getting a puck out, whether it was coverage, whether it was, you know, all of the above, right? You know, not handling the forecheck, you know, kind of, you know, that was a big thing kind of going in, where can you handle the forecheck? Can you make good, clean exits out of your zone? It's not going to happen every time, you realize that, but sometimes when you're not under a lot of pressure, you want to see better decisions made. I think some of the injuries caught up to them, and on the defensive side, you know. But that game right there, so that puts them up 3-2 if they clean up defensively. You go to New York, you take your chances, all right. You know, New York's going to come out, and the Islanders are going to play. And then game seven, you know, if you lose game six, then game seven, you still have a chance, right, back home. But game five for me was the key, and you know, game six, as much as I wanted them to win, I didn't have a lot of confidence in that game.
The Islanders were more opportunistic across that series. They certainly limited their defensive mistakes a lot more than the Bruins did. They got more balance across their four lines. If you certainly look at the scoring that you got from the Bruins on lines 1, 2, 3, and 4 across the series. Certainly later in that series, I think the goaltending started to swerve in the Islanders' direction. Semyon Varlamov had some better games than Tuukka Rask at the end of the series. And as Beersy touched on, I think the attrition of some of the injuries, whether that was Rask, Miller, Carlo, some of the other injuries you were experiencing up front, all started to gain some traction and worked against the Bruins.
Well, just going back to that game five.
The performance by the top line was fantastic, right? Marchand's goal was unbelievable. Pastrnak has a couple of goals. You know, McAvoy in on the assists. You know, just that Bergeron, that whole line, the top guys. You wasted a great performance by their top guys, and that to me was what swung it the other way. And you know, the balance of scoring and the balance of the four lines, that type of thing. And I'm sure we'll get more into it here as we go forward. But you know, I was cringing in game five, because that's the one they needed to win, you know, and then you've got a chance, and you lose that game, you're going back to New York, and now they've got some momentum, and they're playing better, and they feel better about their game.
And that's where the opportunistic Islanders really came in. So the Bruins vastly outplayed them in that first period. Pastrnak scores a minute 25 in. Now the Islanders go on the man advantage late in that first period on a suspect penalty call on Sean Corrali, but the Islanders score. And it's Matt Barzal who gets that goal. And then all of a sudden, things started to tilt. And the Bruins, throughout that playoff series, had a hard time with second periods. And I thought it was fascinating. Bruce Cassidy said You know, it was something that they knew they were going to face. It was a challenge they were going to face after watching what the Penguins did. And I thought the phrase was interesting. We had to live it at certain points to be able to understand it and get used to it, and they could never overcome it. And how many times did the Islanders start to swerve the momentum in that second period? They did it again in Game 6, and they're moving on.
Well, it had that feeling as you went through that first period, and the Bruins were playing so well. And as you mentioned, they got up early, but they couldn't extend the lead, right? They were getting chances, and they couldn't get it to 2-0. And it kind of had that feeling for me that, you know, I looked at the clock with, you know, 3-4 minutes to go in the period. They need to get another one here. You can't get out of this period just up 1-0 and be happy with it. And then the penalty, now it's 1-1 at the end of the period. And if you're the Islanders, you're thinking, we just took the best punch that the Bruins have, and we're still tied in this game. And that's a huge boost for them.
Yeah, and the Bruins kept coming. 5-on-5, they kept coming in that game. And it was the penalty kill that, you know, swayed it the other direction. You know, you allow 3 power play goals against you in a game. I mean, the Bruins scored 4 goals in that game. The way that their team is constructed, that's good enough to win. That should be good enough to win. And defensively, they weren't able to outscore their mistakes.
And I think the other thing that the Islanders did a lot better than the Bruins, and maybe this was part of the attrition too, they played a much more poised game. When they were under duress in Game 5 and the Bruins are pouring it on, and they poured it on throughout the game, they didn't panic, and they didn't allow multiple goals to put them into a hole that they could not come back from.
I mean, I think we sat here and told everybody at the beginning of the series, this is a good hockey team. This is a team that's going to be difficult to play against. I think for maybe it was because of the way that they had played down the stretch that some people around here were underrating the Islanders and thought this was going to be an easy series. I never would have thought that this was going to be an easy series just because of exactly what you're talking about, Judd. It's a good, solid hockey team. Barry Trotz has them all playing the right way. You knew they were going to be physical, and that came into this series as well, because the Bruins, I mean, you can point at the loss of Carlo in addition to the loss of Miller during the first round. It really hampered this team. They had to go and play a lot of minutes from guys that you would probably not necessarily want to have out there in clutch situations in these games.
Well, and I'll go even deeper than that. You know, the guys that you had counted on to be available on the back end, Kampfer and Moore, were both unavailable.
Right.
I mean, these are two NHL veteran guys that you have at your disposal, and that's why you have them there. You know, they're not making a ton of money. Well, Moore is actually, but he's making pretty good money, but Kampfer isn't. But those guys are there to be, you know, to sub in when there's injuries, and they have in the past, and you had neither one, you didn't have either of them available to you. And that's huge. I mean, you know, we can talk about Rask and all you want and some of the other things, but when you don't have, and I know Tenorti's got NHL experience and I get that. And I thought he battled and played pretty well. I thought Clifton, I thought they got a lot out of Clifton. But, you know, if at some point it starts to add up and you start to see, and I tried to do it the right way the other day, Jed, and, you know, no disrespect, but you see why they're extra guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I was one of those guys, so I know that. And it's just, when you have to play every day, when you have to play every game, it starts to add up and you kind of start to see some of the holes.
The Islanders played the exact same lineup. Sorry, Beers. The Islanders played the exact same lineup from game 1 through 6 in that Bruins series. I think they only, other than Wahlstrom going down at the midpoint of that series against the Pittsburgh Penguins and Travis Zajac coming in to replace him, they didn't make a single move with their lineup. And part of the success that the Islanders had during the regular season was because especially that decor was healthy throughout the entire season. They only finished 2 points behind the Bruins in the standings. I understand that they finished fourth, but this was a team that I would say heading into the trade deadline was a club that could have easily won the East Division. They got the offense went south for them at the tail end of the regular season, but they were able to recapture it in the playoffs.
Islanders use 8 defensemen. The Bruins use 13 during the season.
Yeah. I mean, to Judd's point, the only change that they made during the series was swapping goalies game one, right?
The only
and
change
that turned out to be a pretty good move.
The only change that the Bruins made was Carlo coming out.
Mm-hmm. And Smith.
And Smith missed one game.
Too, yeah.
And I think he was banged up. DeBrusk was taken out for performance-related, you know, for Kuhlman. So, you know, they made a couple of changes, but not a ton, right? Not a ton. But when you lose Carlo, that's a massive part of your back end and what he provides for you, especially on the penalty killing and the defensive side of things.
All right, we're going to get into a lot of what has happened over the course and the news that we've gotten here over the course of the last couple of days, getting ideas about who was hurt, how badly they were hurt, guys talking about, you know, what their offseason's going to look like as far as surgeries, contracts. We got a lot to get to on that front as well. And your calls, reaction to the season, to the series, and what you'd like to see in this offseason coming up as well. 617-779-0985. It's the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show, our season finale.
The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Shaws at Star Market Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This is a team loss, you know, to me, all the way down the line. Certainly could have used some, you know, more scoring out of certain people in this series. You know, you can do the math on that. I thought our power play was good. It gave us some opportunities. The top line generated well, but some of the other, you know, people needed to score more if we're going to allow that many goals, right? So that's a bit of the formula of keep it out of your net and win 2-1. But if you're going to give up 3 and 4 goals, then you better be scoring 5. And we weren't able to do that.
Bruins coach Bruce Cassidy summing up some of the issues in the series. So we welcome you back to the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Go shopping, get rewards, and save at Shaws and Star Market by downloading the Just For You app. Shaws and Star Market, official partners of the Boston Bruins Radio Network. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers back with you. All right, so let's talk about what will be the biggest and has already been the biggest topic of conversation regarding the Bruins' exit from the playoffs, and that is Tuukka Rask, who revealed yesterday that he has been playing throughout the course of the year with a torn labrum in his hip, is expected to have surgery here in the next few weeks, will not be available, whether he's a Bruin or not, for the start of next season. It's going to keep him out until, sounds like, at least January, maybe February, with the rehab on that. We know that he was hurting. He took some time off during the regular season. We know that he was hurting during the postseason. Should he have been playing in game 6 especially? That's when people were calling for Jeremy Swayman after Tuukka had to be lifted in the third period in game 5. Should he have played?
I think that it was a group decision. You know, I'm almost positive. You know, it's not just going to be Bruce Cassidy sitting down with Tuukka Rask. It's, you're going to have the goalie coach involved. You're going to have the medical staff involved. I'm sure Don Sweeney was involved. Mm. And ultimately, if Tuukka felt he could play and contribute and be a good enough player, you know, at his position, then he plays. You know, he's earned that. Now, if there's doubt, if there's concern, well, then that's a different story. But, you know, when that conversation is had and he says, I can play, which he's been playing all year with it.
Well, so that's what I think a lot of people are missing, is that this is not something new. He's literally played the entire season.
And when you listen to him talk yesterday, I think it was yesterday, he said, you know, there's times where, you know, it seizes up and that's when you see me kind of, whatever he said, wincing or whatever his words were, you know, but it's something that I could play through. And he had played all year, and he'd played well this year. So why wouldn't he play in game six? I'm not sure what he's been playing with it all year. Why are we coming to game six and say he should play?
He had made some big time saves and had played really well just earlier in the series too. I mean, it's not like he had been trashed throughout the series.
The only nuance in there is that he was playing a lot more frequently than he was during the regular season.
Yes, exactly.
So that, I think, had to be a factor.
Why they pulled him in the third period in game five.
And now maybe it makes more sense, because what was the term that Bruce Cassidy used? Why they pulled him in game five? They called it a maintenance thing. So maybe they felt they're going to get him out of there. They didn't necessarily like, and again, I have no idea, but this is just a guess that they didn't like the way he was playing. They felt he was maybe not right. Okay, let's see if we can get him ready for a game six on the island.
Yeah. Plus, it gets Swayman some time because he hadn't seen any live action in forever, right? For a month.
Month and a half.
And if we've got to go to him in game six, then he's seen a period. He only saw three shots, and they were all in the first 2.5 minutes, and one of them went in. But it was a good shot. But he didn't see much. But at least he's in the game, right? At least he's got a little feel for it,
right? So I mean, again, I think that's kind of been lost here. Tuca's hurt. He's been hurt all season, and he talked about the hip led to a back problem, and at one point he said he was struggling to walk for about a week when he took this time off in March and April. So, I mean, it's been a struggle, but through it, I mean, after he took that layoff, he came back, he went 7-1. He was, had a couple of shutouts in there. He played well throughout most of the postseason. This is a guy who's been playing hurt, and he's been effective playing hurt. So,
yeah, but like Judge said, I mean, now you're playing every other day. Yeah. And there's no relief, except for there were 2 days in between, what was it, games two and three. So, but you're playing every other day. And so that obviously took its toll. So there's the question, all right, so how do you work? And they tried to, they tried to get Swayman in for a period in that game when the score was, what was the score? 4-1.
Yeah.
4-1 at the time after two periods. That's a tough dilemma for them, but I'm sure it wasn't it's not an easy decision. It's not like, all right, well, we'll just go with Swayman. No, you talk to the player, you have the conversation with the medical staff. Everybody's together on this. It's a group decision, but ultimately it is the player that says, yes, I can go, and we allowed players, for playing hurt, but. Is he going to get criticized for this now?
if he pulls the chute and says I can't go in game six, he's getting crushed for that. Yeah, there's no doubt. So I mean, it's also no slam dunk that Jeremy Swayman goes in there and wins you game six single handedly.
What a position to put him in.
Yeah, the kid's played what, 9 games in the NHL and hasn't played. He hasn't started a game since the regular season ended. I mean, that's a hell of a spot
on the road on that ice surface against a team that's going to try and close you out with its best effort. They didn't have good first periods basically in the first 5 games, and you knew they were going to come out hard in game six.
You're rolling the dice either way.
It would have been hard.
All right, let's get to you some of your calls here. That's what we'll be doing for a good chunk of the show today. 617-779-0985. We go to Maria in Watertown up first. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning. I just have one word to describe this series, debacle, just a debacle. And before I get to my question, I do want to take an opportunity to once again thank all of you for providing us with the opportunity to vent a little bit and to get some good and thorough, insightful analysis on the Bruins. So thank you very much for your time, gentlemen. But the clip that you played earlier, Ryan, comments from Bruce Cassidy. I'd just like to ask you gentlemen all a question. How do you think Bruce Cassidy did coaching this series? Because I have my own opinions with regard to that, but I'd like to hear your, as honest as you can provide, opinions of how you think Bruce did coaching these young players, because I have yet to hear him honestly take any accountability for the coaching staff's responsibilities or lack of responsibility for what happened during this series. And I know there's another coach in this town who, gets a lot of flack for how he conducts himself with the media. But when they lay a stinker, that team, the coach takes responsibility for it, and I have yet to hear Bruce take that responsibility. So what was the problem here? Is it that these players can't be coached up, or Bruce can't coach them up? Those are my questions, and I hope you gentlemen all have a great summer.
I appreciate the call, Maria. Thoughts on Bruce Cassidy's performance this year, this playoff season?
Well, the principal issue, I think, you know, that I think she's talking about are the forwards. And he tried to squeeze more out of the bottom six forwards. You weren't necessarily getting enough around Charlie Coyle, who I thought had a pretty good series against the Islanders. You needed more production and more consistency from Nick Ritchie. Jake DeBrusk in and out of the lineup. And he was never able to sustain the performance that he had in the first two games of the Capitals series. And it seemed to taper off for him for one reason or another. The fourth line for the Bruins, if you include Curtis Lazar, I know that they are not counted out.
I forgot about his
injury
earlier.
Yeah.
And he had, ACL and MCL. I thought they played well. I thought they tilted the ice a lot, but they weren't able to pitch in with a key goal at a key time. They're not counted upon to do that. That's a bonus, but you really would have liked it, especially considering that you're missing a couple of guys in the back end. And that's where I think Cassidy mentioned that means our forwards have to be better. Maybe we have to get an extra goal here or there. We have to get an extra save, and some guys who are coming into the lineup need to elevate their game.
Well, I'll add to that as well. I thought Craig Smith might have been hurt, and I think he was.
He had a groin issue.
It sure looked like it a couple times going to the bench, and he gave you everything he had. But he was your best option at right wing on that line with Krejci. And Krejci put up some numbers, some of it on the power play. He put up some numbers in that series. I thought Taylor Hall struggled in the series. Mayfield did a great job on him. Mm. He frustrated him. He was physical with him. And I think for Taylor Hall, and I know we'll talk a lot about this, but when I look at his game, I thought he was real good against Washington. All right, and the Islanders have a way of making you look bad because they suffocate you at certain times of the game. I mean, their third periods when they had the lead, I know the Bruins came back a couple of times, but the third period in Game 6, that was a clinic in the way that they played that third. But for Hall, only one goal in that series, and it was an empty netter. You know, I see him as a guy that he's a guy that will help you get to the playoffs, okay? And I have no doubt about that. He's a good fit in that regard. But how he's never gone to a second round in the playoffs, and he's never played against a team, you know, like the Islanders. That suffocate you the way that they can. So that's going to be on him. So that's a learning curve for him. Okay, this is my first foray into the second round, and how it gets more difficult, and how you play against a harder team, and the matchup was a tough one for him in that second round. And, you know, he tried, he dropped the gloves with Mayfield at one point. I think that showed a little bit that, you know, he cared but maybe the frustration was building a bit, standing up for himself. There's a couple different ways you can look at it, but you don't want Taylor Hall dropping the gloves. You want him scoring goals. Or creating offense. And there was offense created, but it wasn't able to get over the hump and bury a few. Maybe if you do, then all of a sudden the confidence rises a little bit, but I liked a lot of what he did. I liked his effort. You know, we all talked about him and the way that he bought in and played both ends of the ice and tried to play that 200-foot game and the back check with his speed and chipped in offensively. But playing against the Islanders in the second round, that's a whole nother level. And Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak, you know, Pastrnak a little inconsistent, but he led them in scoring. They know that level now. Mm-hmm. They got to that level, but is a little harder for Hall. And he's not playing top power play. So, you know, that takes a little bit away from that, those chances, because that top power play unit was so effective. But 5-on-5, I think that's an area that, okay, this is a learning experience maybe for him, even at the age of 29, because it's the first time he's ever been there.
And this also dovetails back to Brandon Carlo and some of the issues on defense. So why were the Bruins successful? And that line had some looks in the first three or four games was because they were getting the pucks in stride. Barry Trotz had mentioned that the Islanders were having a problem with the Bruins off the rush. So getting the puck in players like David Krejci or Taylor Hall's hands, you know, tape to tape, in stride, getting some speed, breaking out of the forecheck, generating some chances, that became a lot harder later
that
in
was
the
game,
series.
That was game three, yeah. Right? I mean, Hall made a great play, back check on Barzal, mm-hmm. start the rush the other way, find Craig Smith, goal, and they had chances off the rush in that game.
And I think that that made it a lot harder. I think that the Bruins coaching staff understood. So, fine, in game four, he felt like the Bruins, for whatever reason, didn't have the jump or the energy. Our defensemen had to be able to move their feet. They were able to do that in game five. But the problem was that the penalty kill and the goaltending weren't able to come up with the key stops at the key times in order for you to win that game and take a lead back to New York.
One thing with Hall, too, that I feel, especially in the last, you know, four games of the series, I think three of the four games, he only had one shot on goal. He looked like he was deferring. You know, there were some times where
I thought in game six he had a chance to shoot there when he broke through and they got the D split a little wide. Letty made a nice play sliding, but I thought he had a good chance
to shoot.
He was
waiting
there
to make that pass. Like, yeah, he had to kind of slow the play down and he was looking to pass the whole way. He wasn't putting himself into the best shooting positions a lot of times, too, when the other guys had the puck.
There was another one in the third period where he broke free and he tried to pass to Smith. Was it Smith in front? It went off the heel of a stick. I think it was the third period. But he finally got some open ice, you know, and he drove down the left side. But he was passing all the way. So, you know, you can nitpick now and you know, say what if. But he's an intriguing guy moving forward. And I know we'll talk about free agency and his comments. But that's a big question for how the Bruins want to handle this one moving forward.
All right, more of your calls coming up next. 617-779-0985. It's the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show.
This is the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
I know we're not even 48 hours removed from the season, but I'm sure you've been thinking about your future. Do you expect to keep playing, and do you think you can come to an agreement with the Bruins, and do you want to stay here?
Yeah, obviously, I thought about it a lot, not just the last couple of days, but the whole season pretty much. But I mean, I'm not going to give you an answer right now. I'm going to need a few weeks. Think about lots of things. Talk to lots of people. I love Boston. See what happens.
David Krejci yesterday. He and Tuca basically had the same answer, which was, can't see myself playing anywhere else in the NHL. And Krejci talked about maybe going back home at some point to play before his time is up. But, you know, that's a two-way street, too. How much of a discount are you willing to take? And does the team want you back at whatever price that turns out to be?
Well, it's more than that, though. Okay, let's say they decide to go in a different direction. What are my answers in-house? Yep. Do I think Charlie Coyle can assume that spot? Where is Jack Studnicka at? What is available either on the trade market or in free agency that I'm probably going to have to overpay even in a flat cap world for if I'm going to try and solve that problem? So there's a lot to consider there. I was thinking about this heading in.
It's got to be a trade, Judd. If you're going that direction, it's got to be a trade.
I don't think it's going to be, I don't think the answer is going to be on the free agent market, but as many questions. So a year ago when we were having this discussion, or not even a year ago because of when the bubble ended, the Bruins had to consider, okay, what are you going to do with Chara? Now the questions are even bigger with your questions regarding Rask and Krejci.
Well, and as you said, you know, you look at Charlie Coyle and say, okay, when he signed that contract, that's the kind of contract you say, okay, well, they have bigger plans for him than third line center if you're going to be paying him that kind of money. Now it's time to make the decision. Is he good enough at this point to be elevated to your second line center on a full-time basis? Despite what he's making, I don't think the answer is yes at this point. I think you've got to have something better than Coyle offers you on the second line, especially if, you know, we're going to talk about Taylor Hall. You know, Hall likes the fit. He likes certainly likes the fit of playing alongside David Krejci. Does he feel the same way if Charlie Coyle's the number two center on
yeah,
this team?
Yeah, I mean, and Krejci talked at length about how they kind of became good friends and, you know, hung around a lot and, you know, said all the right things that way and get Craig Smith over on the right side. I mean, goes without saying, stating the obvious, but it's if he's back, it's short-term deal, and because he's 35 years old, yep. And it's a lot less money.
And he said point blank, he said, you know what, money isn't going to dictate this, you know, this decision for me. It's going to be.
He's making over $7 million right now. I mean,
right.
It's and he had, what was his, I mean, his point totals were pretty strong this year. He was good, and especially when they elevated him to the top power play unit, you know, when they made some changes there, and, you know, personnel-wise, you know, at the beginning of the season, they had Richie on that top unit, and he had Krejci on kind of the second unit, and then they made the change and went a different direction, kind of the direction that they went last year in the playoffs, other than McAvoy being at the point. But, yeah, this is a tough one for them, and a lot of it is going to depend on David Krejci. And I think that they would like to have him back. That's just my personal opinion, but it's going to be at a big reduced rate. Has to be, you know, at this point of his career and the way the cap is.
And you've got a few guys you've got to sign. So if we're starting to think about money, oh, okay, if I have some needs and I do have to go out in free agency and be able to look outside the Bruins organization to fix my problems, how much is that going to cost to talk about the defense? Or if we're talking about forwards up front, either if we're talking about a second line center or maybe some help somewhere on lines three or four to give you a little bit more depth and balance to compete across these long series against these grinding teams. Remember, the divisions are going to change back next year. So you're going to have to deal with Tampa, Toronto, who knows what Montreal is going to look like. Florida is certainly a team that's on the rise here. Philadelphia, how do they bounce back from this season? I'm sure that's a conversation we're going to have a little bit later.
The division, though.
Yeah, won't have to do.
Oh, I'm sorry, not Philadelphia. Why am I not? Sorry, I was thinking about the teams that finished
got
fifth.
The Ottawa Buffalo.
You'll still have that advantage.
Yes.
Well, Ottawa's on the rise. Ottawa's on the rise. Buffalo, we're not sure about yet.
All right, let's go to Tom in Worcester up next here on the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show. Good morning.
Morning. So I wanted to talk about this offseason. I think the past few years, the Bruins have been bounced to the playoffs primarily because they lack size and they lack depth. Going into a offseason where we have $30 million approximately, $27 million in cap space, and need to start filtering in some new people, I just don't trust Sweeney to do it because his track record shows that he doesn't have the skill set to find the pieces that we need. If we look at the big boys that Sweeney's brought in, you got Bolesky, Hayes, Backes, Brett Ritchie, right? You get credit for, I guess, for bringing in Coyle and DeBrusk, who have both fallen off. You let Achari walk. You made no play for Josh Anderson. You signed Frederick as a first rounder. His bad drafts are well documented. There's the contract of Moore. He gets credit for, you know, having good deadline deals. But if you look at those with a little bit more scrutiny, pays Coyle too much, can't keep Johansson because of all of his other bad contracts. He gets credit for bringing in Hall, but Hall wanted to sign here in the offseason, and Sweeney walked away from the deal, and Hall only gets here because he refused to trade to Vegas because of his no-trade clause. His only redeeming quality, supposedly, is that he signs guys to below-market deals. But is that because those guys are so enamored with talking to Don Sweeney, or is it because they want to play with guys like Bergeron? The guy sucks. I don't trust him to rebuild it. Yeah, I want the guy that built our last Cup team, which was Gorton.
I appreciate the call, Tom. I mean, there's definitely some things in there you can't argue with.
No, there's some valid points
yeah.
there.
And, you know, whether you trust him to, you know, look, how we know this is a big offseason because of some of the major decisions that need to be made, right? Goaltending is one of them. Krejci, we were just talking about. Hall. I mean, there's some big decisions to be made. You've got, I mean, Carlo's next contract has to get done. You've got other decisions in that regard. That said, how far away is this team really? I mean, it as they're constructed, if they figure out a way to shore up the goaltending. Do they, you know, you need to add another piece defensively. I think we've learned that. You maybe need to add, as you were saying, Judd, you know, need to add some third and fourth line talent that can make you a little bit more balanced. But realistically, it's not like this is a, you know, this is a team that should be fighting for a playoff spot next year. This is a team that, with a little tinkering, should be back in a position where they can contend for a cup next year.
Well, let's start in net, because with Rask not coming back until January, February.
That really complicates everything.
Yeah. And so, all right, is Swayman ready for full time, or is Vladar ready? And I'm not throwing him out. He's done everything in the American Hockey League. And don't take that one game against Washington. It was the fifth game in 7 days, and they were giving him the Tim Wakefield treatment, where you're going to stay in there the whole game, you know, and you're going to take one for the team here, because and you know guys were banged up. It was 5 games in 7 days, and they got lit up. But you take his body of work and what he did. He was good. He was very good, and he's done a great job in the minors. So, I'm not throwing out the possibility of bringing in a veteran goaltender, you know, and having him split time with Vladar and having Swayman play the majority of games down in Providence next year. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying that's a possibility. If they feel that Swayman is ready, but you got to be careful. I mean, look at Carter Hart, and that's a perfect example. They got him to the NHL, and he had more experience than Swayman did, and they got him to the NHL, and he was going to be their full-time guy. He was going to be their savior. Well, look what his year he had this season. He was bad this year.
When we talked with Andrew Raycroft earlier this year about Swayman and about young goalies, and he said, you know, you have to have somebody else to go to, and you know, it's even better if the guy's, you know, spends his time in the AHL, because he's at some point early on in their career, they're going to go through a bad stretch, and it's a lot easier to work through that in the minors than it is when you're getting hammered on sports radio and hammered in the paper every single day, because, you know, in the minors, you don't have that kind of pressure. And then once you figure out how to work through those bad stretches, that's when you're ready for full time in the NHL.
So two thoughts on that. First of all, you're going to need, if you are going to add a veteran presence with a guy like Swayman, if you want to keep him here in the NHL, it has to be better than Brian Elliott, right?
Yeah.
Brian Elliott couldn't get the Philadelphia Flyers into the playoffs this year. That's not his role. Carter Hart faltered. The Flyers are on the outside looking in. I think it's going to be a very difficult chore. And I think the other thing is, the hard part about Don Sweeney and guys who are general managers in the National Hockey League is, how patient can you be?
Well,
whether that's your fan base, your ownership, what's going on in the ice around the league, it is hard. And there have been a number of guys. I remember Brian Burke talking about patience probably cost him in Toronto. He wasn't willing to be patient enough. He tried to move forward, and the team faltered. He was out of a job. And I think that that's an issue that a lot of general managers really have to contemplate, is patience.
Well, to go back to the point about Tuukka and his injury now, if the Bruins had the idea, and based on his comments, it sounded like Tuukka would almost be amenable to coming back. It's him and Swayman, or it's him and Vladar to start the season.
It's not going to be to start the season.
Well, no, but I'm saying if this was the thinking, that it would be Tuukka plus one of the young guys, that Tuukka would start to take a reduced role, assuming that the young guy's elevated, you know, whichever one it is, and he ends up ultimately taking a back seat and takes a lot less money because of it, but he wants to stay here. Now, if he wants to stay here, there's really no good way for that to work, because who worth anything is going to sign here with the expectation that Tuukka's going to come back and take the number two job in January, February, and you're never going to play again?
Well, I think somebody that needs a job will do it. I think that they can find a veteran goaltender, and I don't think it's going to be Luck. I mean,
but it's going to be somebody who can't find a job somewhere else, and that's not exactly what you're hoping for.
Well, put yourself in Halak's shoes right now. Right, he didn't even dress in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He wasn't even the backup. So I cannot. I think that ship has probably sailed. And if you're him, you're looking for work somewhere else. Mm. But I do think that you can find somebody, and it wouldn't necessarily mean that they would be the number three guy when Tuukka comes back. It would mean that they would split time. And he's probably going to split time with either Vladar or Swayman, whoever comes in here. I don't think that you go with Vladar and Swayman. I don't think that's
the case. That would be really risky.
That would be risky. It would be risky. As much confidence as you have in them, you know, that would be taking that would be rolling the dice, I think, a little bit. And I like both of them. I really do. And I do. I'm in the camp where I think Swayman's going to be excellent, and I hope that's the case. But to start the season with those two would be, I think that would be a big risk. And I think you can bring in a strong veteran guy that can play half the games and you know, or maybe not even half the games, but right around that number. And then when Tuukka comes back, you figure it out from there. But hey, that's a big decision that they have to make right now. The fact that Tuukka is not going to be coming, you're losing Tuukka and Halak. If that's the case, and we don't know about Halak, he didn't speak. That tells you something.
Yeah.
I think it does anyhow.
But I think it's an easier decision organizationally if Tuukka is ready for training camp.
Oh, much easier.
Right? Because then, if he's much willing easier. To take a reduced
role. Oh, then it's Tuukka and Vladar or Tuukka and Swayman.
Yeah, Tuukka and one of the kids.
Yeah, that makes it easy. But now you don't have that option.
And here's the other thing, though. Okay, if our goal is to be able to make the playoffs, can you do it? You know, if you're going to wait for a guy like Rask to get here January or February, we have no idea how he's going to respond. And even he had mentioned he has no idea when they open up that hip, they have no idea what they're going to find or what the recovery is going to be like. Can you get yourself into the playoffs waiting for him until January or February?
To me, that's another big question is at what's his age? 35? Tuukka?
Yeah,
maybe
ish.
Yeah, 34. 34.
How does that injury and the severity of it, and they don't know the severity of it yet, but how does that injury affect a goaltender that's 34 years old and counts on, you know, I heard some goaltenders talking about it over the last day or so that, you know, your hips are everything, especially the way that he plays, and how, you know, what's the recovery rate for a guy that age that relies heavily on that? I think that has to weigh in heavily with the Bruins' decision and whether they bring him back, right? If it's something that they feel, the doctors feel that, you know, this is going to be, the recovery rate is so difficult, you know, and risky for him to even be able to come back and play at the level that he can. Now they've definitely got to go out and make some changes. So, and we don't know that. We're not doctors and they haven't opened up the hip yet. So they don't know the severity of it, but if it's bad enough, then January, February, and what's he going to look like in January and February when he comes back?
I kind of wonder, especially given his thoughts that he's not really interested in playing somewhere else. Does he not get signed? Does he just float until he's ready to go? And then you get a chance to bring him in, maybe give him a tryout and see what he looks like before you make a decision.
I think that's certainly possible. And in the bigger picture, if you kind of look back here for the last couple of seasons, certainly since Halak joined the team, goaltending hasn't been something that you've had to worry about. Goaltending has been a strength of this team, and you've been able to concentrate on some other areas. Well, now you've got to think about it a little bit more.
All right, we've got another hour with you and more of your calls coming up at 617-779-0985 here on the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show.
The Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sport.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.